Marion the Swamp Fox. In the later years of the Revolution, almost all the fighting was in the South. After failing twice to cut the colonies in two at the Hudson, British soldiers were sent to the Southern colonies. They felt sure that many Loyalists would fight with them, and they hoped to win back the South with a Tory aid. There were many Loyalists in the Southern colonies, it is true, but there were also many patriots. Well did they defend their homes, and well did they fight for independence and liberty. Among them all, none deserves greater fame than Francis Marion, the Swamp Fox. Perhaps I cannot better show you how he came by this name than to lead you to one of his favorite camping grounds. But first I must tell you that Marion's men were not finely drilled regulars, with uniforms and shining swords, who fought great battles amid the booming of cannon and the roll of fife and drum. They were rather men who had gathered to fight against the bands of Tories who were spreading destruction through the South. They were men who put themselves under Francis Marion's leadership because they believed he could lead them to success. They came and went, now fighting, now returning to their homes to care for their wives and children, and then returning to fight again. They wore no uniform and were often scantily clothed. Their swords, if they had any, were either taken from some British prisoner or more often were old saws heated and hammered into weapons. They were nearly always short of ammunition. Indeed, it often happened that not more than half the men went into a fight. The rest stood back and waited for the fall of some fighter, either friend or foe, in order to secure arms or ammunition. The band sometimes numbered not more than 20 men, sometimes 70, or perhaps 150. The number was always changing. Whether with few men or many, Marion accomplished his purpose, which was to worry the enemy whenever and wherever he could. Cornwallis, the British commander, found Marion a frequent annoyance. "I would give a good deal to have him taken," he said. And again, Colonel Marion had so wrought upon the minds of the people that there was scarcely an inhabitant between the Santee and Petty that was not in arms against us. Some parties had even crossed the Santee and carried terror to the gates of Charleston itself. Marion in his camp at Snow's Island presents us a picture very much like Robin Hood in his retreat in Sherwood Forest. In the midst of forest-grown swamplands where two rivers joined, the camp was difficult to reach and easy to guard, and best of all, near to the places where the enemy could be found. The island itself was fairly high and dry, covered with forests and thickets of cane. Here Marion encamped when not in motion. He destroyed all bridges in the neighborhood and seized all boats. He closed the ordinary paths into the swamp with heaps of brush and hewn timber. Then he rested secure in his island fortress. Here were stored such arms and ammunition as the band had. Here were held their prisoners, and here their wounded rested and recovered their strength for another day of fighting. Sometimes these invalids cleared and cultivated a small spot where they planted corn. Sometimes they shot small game in the woods around them, and here they welcomed back their loved commander and his fighting men. Night after night, when the band was here in camp, small parties went out in all directions, for the enemy was near at hand and there was always work to be done. If the enemy was too numerous and the fight went against the band, the men would scatter into the forest and find their way back, one by one, through the pathless swamp to the camp. Every man was an expert horseman, and they trained the horses to swim the streams and to pick their way through drowned lands and swampy thickets. Marion himself rode a fine horse which he had taken from a captured Tory captain. The horse became almost as famous as the man. He took to the water as though it were his native element, and the other horses of the brigade learned to follow his fearless lead as their riders had learned to follow his master. A story often told gives us a picture of Marion in the Snow's Island camp. A British officer was sent to arrange with Marion for an exchange of prisoners. He was met miles from the camp by a small party of Marion's men. They blindfolded him and led him roundabout paths through swamp and forest. When his eyes were uncovered, the young man stood before Marion in the midst of Marion's band. A natural opening in the forest was surrounded by lofty trees hung with streaming moss. Here, under a lofty pine, were men asleep, resting perhaps after a night raid. There were others mounting in readiness for some new venture. Rifles leaned against trees. Horses, ready saddled, grazed nearby. The British officer was much impressed by the scene and by Marion himself. Marion, always courteous, invited the young man to dinner. Imagine the British officer's astonishment to find the meal consisting of only roasted sweet potatoes served on pieces of bark. The officer's curiosity was sufficient to lead him to say, "But surely, General, this cannot be your ordinary fare." "Indeed, sir, it is," replied Marion, "and we are fortunate on this occasion, in entertaining company, to have more than our usual allowance." We have no continuous story of the deeds of Marion's men. On the contrary, the many stories of their doings are of incidents here and there. On one occasion, Captain Gavin Witherspoon was sent out with 4 men on scout duty. Hard pressed by a band of Tories, the 5 took refuge in the nearest swamp. For a while they lay quiet, but at length young Gavin stole back in the direction of the Tory band from whom they had escaped. He had not gone far before he heard voices. Peering cautiously through the trees, he saw 7 men gathered about a campfire, watching, no doubt, for the return of the men they had chased. The captain looked long enough to discover that the Tories had stacked their guns against an uprooted pine tree some little distance from their resting place. Then, creeping back to his companions, he proposed that they attempt a capture. The others objected, but the captain had no mind to lose so good an opportunity. He went back alone and watched the Tory camp. At last every man was quiet. They must be asleep. So, with Indian-like caution, he crept up to the guns and silently carried them off. It required several journeys to dispose of them all safely. Then he returned and, with leveled rifle, called upon the Tories to surrender. Stumbling to their feet, half asleep, the Tories were powerless without their guns. The young captain had 7 prisoners when his men finally came up. This was just the sort of work in which Marion's men delighted. It was only a few days after this capture of Witherspoon's that Marion himself, with all the force he could muster, made a night attack on a large body of Tories. The only approach to the Tory camp was by way of a plank bridge, and the noise of the horses' feet on the bridge was closely followed by an alarm gun in the camp. Marion won in the fight that followed, but with more loss than he usually suffered. After this, the cautious leader carefully avoided bridges, or, if he must cross them, he had the blankets of his men spread on the planks to deaden the sound of the horses' tread. Another midnight raid was made upon a party of Tories who were bringing out from Charleston supplies for newly gathered Tory bands. The scout had brought in word of the muskets with bayonets, ammunition, swords and pistols, saddles and bridles to be had, if the Tories could be surprised. Marion with his men approached the camp. There was no guard. Some slept, others made merry with wine and cards. Suddenly, Marion's men were in their midst. There was no resistance. The supplies were captured with many prisoners. There was with Marion a soldier who had won fame early in the war. This was Sergeant Jasper, who, with Marion himself, had taken part in the defense of a fort in Charleston Harbor against 9 ships of war. During a fierce battle, the American flag had been shot away from its staff and had fallen outside the fort. Jasper's name will always be remembered for his bravery in springing over the rampart to the beach, rescuing the flag, and restoring it to its place, all in direct range of the British guns. Later, the same Sergeant Jasper made himself of great use as a scout. He had a natural talent for disguise, which gave him ready access to British camps. 2 times at least, he visited a brother who was a Tory and a sergeant in a British regiment. During the second of these visits, a small party of American prisoners was brought in on the way under guard to Savannah. Jasper resolved to rescue these prisoners and, with one companion, placed himself in ambush near a spring where he believed the party would halt. Although there were 10 guards, the rescue was accomplished. Jasper did not live to see the end of the war and freedom, but died in battle, bravely defending the colors for which he had so often fought. His name lives, however, and will live for his brave deeds. The story of one of the successes connected with Marion's name tells us also of a patriotic South Carolina woman, Mrs. Mott. She was a wealthy widow and had just moved into a fine new mansion house on a hill which overlooked all the country round. Scarcely had she finished moving her household goods from the old house to the new house when the British decided that the new house would make a fine fort and sent soldiers to seize it. Mrs. Mott had to return to the farmhouse, and the mansion became Fort Mott. A deep trench was dug around it, with the wall at its inner edge. The place was held by a garrison of 150 men. This fort Marion besieged, with the help of Continental soldiers under Lee, but the garrison within refused to surrender, knowing that a British force was on the way to aid them. If the fort was to be taken by the Americans, it must be taken quickly before this force arrived. There seemed no way but to set on fire the mansion house, which occupied almost every foot of space inside the wall. Mrs. Mott had been very kind to the American officers, and they dreaded to tell her that they must burn her house. They little knew how ready they would find her to help the patriotic cause. She even found for them a bow and arrows, brought long ago from India, and bade them shoot fire with these upon the mansion's roof. For this the noon hour was chosen, when the hot rays of the sun had dried and heated the roof. The bow was put into the hands of one of Marion's men. Balls of blazing fire were fastened to the arrows, and one by one three of these were lodged upon the roof. The garrison within, seeing their danger, sent men to the roof to put out the fire, but Marion's one cannon was turned against them, and the garrison could only surrender. In the last year of the war, the Southern armies were commanded by Nathanael Greene, a fine soldier, second probably only to Washington himself in the whole American force. Marion ably assisted Greene and helped to clear the way for the final victory. It is not in the line of regular battle that we remember Marion best. It is not with the roll of fife and drum we think of him. Instead, we picture him finding his way along lonely roads by the light of the midnight moon. We see him on his faithful steed, swimming the river or wading the ford. We think of him dashing down without warning on some Tory band. With his bravery, we remember his fine courtesy and the mercy he ever showed to prisoner or fallen foe. No deeds of cruelty stain his story. His men loved him and served to show their love. He loved his country as they too loved her. Together they fought for her and freedom. So lived and served Frances Marion, the Swamp Fox of the Carolinas.